I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ohio's been drifting to the right for a bunch of years now. It used to be one of the most middle-of-the-road states. The blue cities have stayed very blue. But the red areas of Ohio have gotten increasingly red.
Democrats could overperform in the right places here to have a shot at winning this. But they have a fair shot because they consistently have an edge in candidate recruitment.
Rishi Sunak. He could have had a fundamentally different premiership. It's a masterclass in what does it look like to bring people along with you and to fail at that.
I think the immediate outlook is dire, 100% dire. But I don't think that the medium-term or long-term outlook is dire at all.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
The United Kingdom is a great country.
Never, never been a good bet to bet against America.
Hi, hello, and welcome. I'm Royfield Brown, who is sat in at Birmingham. And you know what? The weather's been utterly lovely today. Mid-Atlantic is a program where we dissect the pulse of American and British politics. And today we're going to delve into, first off anyway, into a pivotal moment in Ohio's political landscape. Bernie Moreno's recent triumph in the GOP Senate primary, a victory steeped in the endorsement of one Donald Trump. This event marks a discernible shift within the Ohio Republican Party, steering away from its establishment roots towards a more Trump-centric orientation. Joining me to unravel this are political analyst Aaron Fisher from Oakland, astute pollster Logan Phillips in Washington, D.C., and then for the British section of the show, but you never know, might just raise their hand and fire a question off in the American section, we have seasoned consultant Leah Brown in Kent and the ever-provocative political thinker that is Corey Bernard in Manchester. Together, we'll explore how Moreno's win and the future of Rishi Sunak, what they mean for politics of countries on both sides of the Atlantic. The Democratic operative David Pepper put it succinctly, Ohio Republicans had a simple choice yesterday. Nominate a candidate from the lane that won Ohio by 25 points 2 years ago, or nominate a candidate from the lane that won by just 6 that year. They eagerly embraced the latter to run against Sherrod Brown.
One of the things that came up during this campaign I want to address is the idea that Chuck Schumer put some money in to help me. If helping me means running really mean and horrible ads about me. But one of the things that people say, well, yeah, but he said that you were tied to Trump. Well, let me just say something. I wear with honor my endorsement of President Trump. I wear that with a badge of honor. Because under President Trump, this nation was safer. It was more secure. We had prosperity around the world. We had generationally low interest rates, and we had generationally low inflation. Under Joe Biden, everything is objectively worse.
With the 2022 elections as a backdrop, where traditional Republicans fared significantly better, we are going to ask first our pollster, Logan Phillips, why exactly Ohio is so important, looking at the presidential map.
Yeah, that's a great question. And if you've been following American politics, hearing that Ohio is at the center of the election might not sound like good news for Dems. And you'd be right, because this is one of the most heavily GOP-slanted maps in American history on paper. Now, the reason why that is, Senate races, every race is up every 6 years, and the collection of states that just happen to be up now keep moving to the right of the country. So this is, every 6 years, Democrats are playing in hard mode. And to make things a little harder in terms of them being able to keep their majority, they keep just killing it every 6 years. 6 years ago was one of their best elections of the millennium in 2018. And 6 years before that, or 12 years before that, was their other best year, 2006. And in 2012, when Obama was running for re-election, the incumbents just managed to overperform across the board. So there's all these red states that are up that Democrats, or two red states the Democrats have to defend to keep the Senate. And a bunch of swing states on top of that, like Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Nevada. So not easy for them to do. But Democrats really, in my view, against some of the conventionalism, I think they have a fair shot. They're underdogs, but they have a fair shot because they consistently have an edge in candidate recruitment. And boy, have we seen that in Ohio. Much like you said, the GOP chose the candidate that was the least positioned to win. And we've seen similar things happen in other states in terms of who's actually running. So Democrats could overperform in the right places here to have a shot of winning this.
Aaron, I'll come to you. Moreno campaigned with J.D. Vance, Ohio's other U.S. senator, and he's also a Republican, a populist. Does this kind of really signal a shift in the politics of the whole state? Is it becoming much more right-wing?
So Ohio's been drifting to the right for a bunch of years now. It used to be one of the most middle-of-the-road states. It was considered even the tipping point state in the Electoral College in a number of presidential elections, which is to say that it was the set of electoral votes that would crown the winner, essentially, of the presidential election. So one of the things that's happened is the blue cities have stayed very blue, but the red areas of Ohio have gotten increasingly red. And so where Sherrod Brown actually served initially in the House is in southeastern Ohio in Appalachia. And he was able to win there, I believe, a number of times as a Democrat running in that region. Since then, things have changed a lot. That part of the state actually swung furthest of any congressional district in the whole country from Obama to Trump, which is something that's happened in a fair number of places in Ohio. It's also a very gerrymandered state. There's a lot of things that have gone on there, but I do think that it fits in with the larger federal trend of MAGA taking over the Republican Party. And that has been more or less completed in Ohio with the exception of the governor. So now you have two senators who really come from the MAGA wing of the party, in this case, a nominee and a sitting senator. And that seems to be the direction that Ohio Republicans want to go, which created this funny experience on social media where both Democrats and MAGA supporters were cheering the same guy winning on the same night.
Logan, how emblematic is this rightward shift that we've seen in Ohio with other, let's say, Senate Republicans on the Republican ticket? Is this some kind of outlier, or is this emblematic of a further rightward shift in Republican candidates looking towards a November election?
You've had two alternative switches at the same time in the GOP that makes this confusing. You have on one end, you have primary voters want guys who are going to fight. And so they're looking for some sort of like antagonism and holding back Democrats. But they're also looking for moderacy on the economic policies. And the other Republican senator, J.D. Vance, is one of the only guys who, once he's been elected, to walk the walk, not just talk the talk, and that he has been pursuing some more bipartisan deals with Democrats, which is the only way you're going to get moderate economic policy that helps working class voters, because those are the politicians that are actually pushing for that stuff. Republicans, they're the outliers, right? So if you're a Republican pushing that stuff, you don't work with the other side, you're never going to get anything done. So it's like these anti-establishment, but let's do more pro-working class policy shift. Now, in terms of which is going to be ascendant long-term, I think we're going to see what happens after Donald Trump is gone. Maybe when he's not a factor in politics or passes away. If this is, you know, Moreno's case, he was polling in third in this primary. and he started to go up a lot after the Trump endorsement. I don't think he would have won without it. So this might be more about who did Donald Trump choose as his personal guy. And for voters that aren't paying that much attention, they're coming in on election day, they're Googling the candidates and they see that and they vote for him. It might not have been so much that Marino's particular politics or even J.D. Vance's particular politics in the last primary were as compelling.
Yeah, it's fascinating that so Trump came in to support the MAGA candidate because it was his guy. And at the same time, the Democrats came in and essentially ran a bunch of ads saying that Bernie Moreno was the MAGA candidate that we had to defeat, but really doing so as a means of signaling to MAGA, this is the guy we hate the most, therefore you should vote for him. So it's really the power struggle is particularly pronounced where you've got this sort of a primary, people ending up on the same side who are diametrically opposed to each other. Now, interestingly, in some of the other states, we haven't seen this dynamic play out, most importantly in Montana. In Montana, the candidate that normally would be considered more MAGA didn't win, although that largely has to do with the fact that Trump came out and basically said, I want the less MAGA guy. So there is a point at which apparently you can out MAGA Donald Trump and he decides you're not MAGA anymore. So the sort of floating target thing is, it's hard to read the tea leaves with him sometimes. The other most important state in determining control of the Senate is Arizona, and it was MAGA and a runaway. So Carrie Lake, one of the foremost election deniers in the country, still says that she was cheated out of her Senate election 2 years ago. It's going to be the candidate there. And I would suggest that of those three key races, you have a slight blue lane in Arizona, probably a toss-up in Ohio, which is about as good as you can hope for if you're wanting Democrats to win. And then in Montana, Tester is a particularly strong candidate, probably the strongest candidate a Democrat could possibly come up with if they were making one in a lab. And he's still pulling a couple of points ahead, despite being in a state that went for Trump by something like 30 or 40 points.
Just a question, just based on what you just said then, with regards to Arizona. And obviously, Kristen Sinema announced a couple of weeks ago, didn't she, that she was no longer... I think I don't know if it was just rumors or whether she said she wasn't going to be running for the Democrats again. So obviously the assumption that she would run as a third party or independent, right? And you just said then that based on the two candidates now in Arizona, it's tipping blue, especially considering, as you said again, that's going to really help determine the balance of the Senate. My question is, do you think Kristen Sinema announcing that she's no longer running hindered that, or has it not really made any difference? Because would she have split? Which vote would she have split, and has it made any difference?
Yeah, I can answer that because I have a polling average that tracks the version. It is very bizarre that Sinema as an independent was taking so much from both Republicans and Democrats. I really do think this does help Democrats because the national Democrats can now get behind Gallego versus having to be torn, because either way they'd have a candidate and they like to back their incumbents. But here's what the polling is, right? So if Gallego against Lake, Gallego's up by 3.1 points. And some of that is driven by Gallego's own internal polling because he loves to release polls that show him down. He's the only guy doing that. And then he uses it in every single advertisement. So I think he's actually up by a little more than that. So up 3 points when it's Gallego v. Lake. And then when it's Gallego v. with Sinema in there too, then his lead is only two points. Sinema's getting 20% of the vote, right? So she's really taken from both of these guys to a surprising degree. But she wasn't really even collecting signatures. There wasn't any sign that she was actually interested in running. I think she had a real chance to impact the race, but the path to victory was probably less than a 5% shot. And I don't think she wants to be embarrassed. So she pulled the cord.
One of the really interesting things that is set up now, so let's say Democrats hit the inside straight, as people like to say, and they win the 50 seats and they win the presidency. They've actually lost two very centrist Democrats in Manchin and Sinema and upgraded the Sinema seat. So they actually, in a lot of ways, can pass more legislation if this comes to pass. Now, at the same time, this election could also easily be one where Biden doesn't win. They don't get that 50th seat, which wouldn't really matter anyway because of the president is the tiebreaker. Essentially, the vice president is considered the 51st vote in the Senate, and they break all ties. And so the variance between the policy outcomes that we could have after this election is as high as it's ever been in living memory.
Come back to you, Logan. I thought the Trump endorsement was a busted flush. But it's obviously not. It's one thing to be MAGA, but it's another thing for Trump to come in and ceremonially anoint you as his preferred candidate. But I thought we've seen a few primaries where that was seen to be as significant as it was in other elections. Or am I just reading the runes incorrectly?
Yeah, I think there's two things going on here. One, when it comes to governor races, voters are looking a lot more at the candidate-specific leadership skills than they are in Senate races, where they're seen as more of an avatar of what's going to happen on the federal level. That's why these races tend to be less partisan in the general election, too. And so if this is the guy with Trump, the Senate races, that's going to mean more. And then second, and we're not going to see as many governor races. It's going to be mostly Senate races just because you only have a few in these that are on the same year as presidential. But the other part is in 2022, Trump wasn't as much in the news. He was a huge factor in these nominations, don't get me wrong, and it helped cost them the Senate. But he's just much more of a factor now that he is going to be the nominee. And so I think the influence of his endorsement means more. If he loses the presidential election, then it'll probably mean less again in 26.
Aaron, let you have the last word on this. We haven't talked about the State of the Union, and it seems like that happened like months ago now, but we saw a pugnacious Joe Biden. Is this the Joe Biden we're going to see all the way through this election campaign? Confident, on his front foot, so to speak, and ready to take it to the Republicans?
That, of course, remains to be seen. I would say that most of his campaign events aren't quite like that, but nothing is quite like the State of the Union speech anyway. It was a really interesting affair, in part because Republicans violated a cardinal rule of politics, which is you don't lower the bar for your opponent like that. If he stood up, managed to speak the whole time, he passed, because the Republicans basically said that he couldn't even keep the drool in his mouth. How is he going to even pull off a speech? And so the bar was set very low. And also, not only did he clear that bar, he went well beyond. And so pretty much everywhere he got high marks. And that's not going to be the standard everywhere he goes, right? When you're on the trail and you're meeting with voters who care more about your positive message than just making partisanship, when you're not speaking to a TV audience, things get very different in a hurry. And it remains to be seen if he's going to deeply engage in more of a retail politics style campaign. Takes a lot of effort, a lot of energy. He's also the sitting president right now. But last cycle, he didn't really do a whole lot of that. Some of that was chalked up to COVID, which was obviously a reasonable concern in late 2020. We'll see. I do think that the campaign has done a lot to turn up the heat. It's clear that they're going to be more sharp-elbowed. If you follow the social media feeds, for example, they're very aggressive. That was a very aggressive State of the Union speech by historical standards. Normally, there are affairs where partisanship is supposed to be put aside a bit, and it's been Republicans who have tended to be the more aggressive ones in that setting. And so for Biden to be more aggressive than the Republicans is a really different dynamic than what we've been watching for many years now.
I lied. I said you were going to have the last word. Logan, you're going to have the last word. So just give us the state of the polls at the moment for the presidential matchup, Logan, and then we'll nip over to Britain.
Yeah, I would say that Joe Biden, while he is still down in the polls, he is notably in a better place today than he was on January 1st and February 1st. Some of that is from the State of the Union, I think, and some of it might be because he has a huge cash advantage. Donald Trump today had to cancel an event in Arizona because his campaign didn't have enough money for it, which is insane in March for that to happen. I've never even conceived of that as a possibility in a presidential campaign, but because the RNC and his campaign have been Trump's way to pay off legal fees, that's going to be a factor here. Biden is going to have a big early spending advantage. He's already spending in swing states, so we're going to see if it changes things. It may or may not, but here's what we've been seeing in some of these states, right? First, just nationally, Biden's gained about a half point on Trump since the State of the Union. Probably more, right? But the way I do these things is I try to be conservative of the polling average, have high-value stuff. High-value polls, which haven't come in yet earlier, have a little more weight. But he's now down by about 1.1% in the polls, up from being down about 1.6. Now, in the swing states, we've seen some important gains for Biden. He's gained a little over 2 points in Michigan. He's gained a little more than 2 points on Trump in North Carolina, 2.5 points in Georgia. So these are all states he's down by. If you're looking at the Midwest in particular, in Pennsylvania, he's down by 1.5 points. In Michigan, he's down by 1.7. In Wisconsin, he's down by 1. Now, if he flips all three of those states, again, we're just talking about polling, he would be on track for exactly 270 electoral votes. And if the election were tomorrow, let's say, having a 1.7% miss in the region of the Midwest is not exactly unheard of. It's happened twice in the last two presidential elections and many times before. Now, the good news for Joe Biden is he doesn't need a polling miss because there's 7.5 months to go. So the polling situation is not ideal for Joe Biden today, but he is clearly has a viable path to victory here. And I think the freakouts that more folks than not have, or the premature celebrations on the other side of the aisle, are, let's just say it, very premature. Elections change a heck of a lot more than that on average. Now, it could go, Trump's leads could get bigger. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be in Biden's direction, but Biden sure as hell has a pathway to victory here.
Yeah, first off, that 270 number is important for our international people. That's exactly the number of electoral college votes you need to win the presidency. So 270 would be winning by the minimum. One thing I wanted to say on the money front is one of the interesting dynamics that's happened since the last time we spoke is that Donald Trump essentially took over the RNC and the National Republican Party. And there's a hole in the bucket there, because what's likely to happen, because it's been happening for a long time, and now he has his daughter-in-law installed as one of the chairs, is that they're going to shift money from the Republican Party to Donald Trump for legal fees. And so they're actually, as they raise money, they're also then shifting money away from the purpose that most people think that it's for. And there's a lot of evidence to show that's actually depressing fundraising as well, because if you wanted to donate to Donald Trump's legal fund, you actually can do that directly. So why would you want to do it through the Republican Party? So there's the money race element of this is going to be really interesting to track. And the Democrats are opening up a lead that's unlike anything we've seen for quite a while.
Hey, I just want to quickly add on this, on the Arizona thing. That's something my intern told me right before I got on the call when I was checking in with him. I'm Googling right now and I'm not seeing a fact check on that. That's what I believe happened, but I should have checked that before I said it. I just don't want to say it as the gospel truth in case I have it wrong.
Look at us, real-time fact checking. Woof, right? I tell you what, Twitter could learn a thing or so from us. On that note, we're going to nip over to Britain. We're going to look at the travails of Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who's navigating turbulent waters within the Conservative Party. He's facing challenges from a factionalized base and lots of internal dissent. He's acknowledged the strain of recent weeks. Sunak has, however, called for unity, particularly with the crucial local elections in May looming. Despite rallying calls for solidarity, underlying tensions persist, with figures like Penny Mordaunt at the center of leadership speculation. As Sunak strives to galvanize his party, the backdrop of poor polling and an anticipated electoral annihilation casts a long shadow over his leadership.
What is going on? Is there a leadership challenge? And if so, who by?
I think there are a small number of people who are not really thinking this thing through properly. Because if you want a leadership challenge, you want another leader, you've got to decide who you want. Now, supposing we had those 53 letters that you were talking about, and we did have a leadership contest, as Sam was just saying, I can rattle off four names very quickly, as Kemi, Suella, Robert Janrek and Penny Mordaunt, who would probably certainly be in the race, and possibly others, and there'd be no unity amongst the party as to who should actually be our leader eventually, and I'm not sure that the splits wouldn't continue. So I think, actually, we would be very, very foolish to try and think at this stage of wanting a new leader before the election.
The trouble is, the message that seems to be coming back from the focus groups and the polling is that people have gone, even if you achieve all of that, people have said, well, you know what, you've had your time, it's 14 years. We don't even necessarily think that Labour are going to be any better, but we think we're done with you guys. You had your chance and you didn't deliver, and anything you are delivering on, you're only doing it just because of the election coming up, and we don't necessarily trust you're going to stand by any of that. That's a fair reading by voters, isn't it?
Well, I think if supposing we did have a change of leader, four different leaders in 4 years, I think the country and the world would consider the Conservative Party as a laughingstock.
I'm going to start with you over there in Broadstairs in Kent. is he actually going to be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland by the time of the next election? Leah Brown, over to you.
Call me optimistic, but I think he will be. And I think that's because he's going to call the general election pretty soon. And I am not listening to the naysayers about mid-October, mid-November. I'm not really interested in that. I think he is so keen to not be deposed or removed by his peers that he would rather take the country through a general election prematurely before he's reached the 2% inflation or before a boat leaves for Rwanda than face the embarrassment of being removed by the 1922 committee.
Planes to Rwanda. It's boats across France.
Oh, yeah. Planes to Rwanda. This is very late. It's very late at night here.
It absolutely is. Corey, I have little sympathy for Rishi Sunak. He's a multimillionaire, okay? He's a prime minister of, what, the sixth biggest economy in the world, right? So what if he's got a few little local difficulties in terms of controlling, corralling his own political party? But I do think it doesn't matter who is going to be the leader of the Conservative Party right now. You're going to have a fractious party and you're going to take a shellacking in the local elections in May, and potentially there's going to be electoral meltdown for the oldest political party in the Western world and the most successful one in the next general election, regardless of who is the leader. Am I wrong?
You're not wrong, but it didn't have to be this way. Didn't have to be this way, as far as I'm concerned, anyway. I also have little sympathy for Rishi Sunak, but not for the same reasons as you. I have little sympathy for him because he came in October 2022. It was a wild time, wasn't it? 2022. He didn't have to then call another election until the end of December 2024. He had a clear 2 years and some change. It was enough time, as far as I'm concerned, for him to draw a hard line underneath Boris Johnson and Liz Truss and really set a vision, a grand vision, might be doing a bit too much, but setting a serious vision and really changing the fortunes maneuvering the country into a new direction and his party as well. And he's just not done that. He's completely dropped the ball. He's completely wasted his time. He's wasted the past 18 months. I don't know what this guy's doing. So that's why I don't have any sympathy for him, because he's not done it. You could say it was a poison chalice, right? Came in after Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. But at the same time, people looked at him and thought, finally a grown-up in the room. And he could have really led into it. And he's just, I don't know what this guy's doing. He reminds me of somebody who's literally just fell into a position that they didn't really want, they didn't really apply for. They were just the only one left. And that is actually what happened, wasn't it, really? They were the last person on the team. Everybody else had left. And he's really giving, that's the energy he's giving across. But for me, it just didn't have to be that way. If it was me, also, the other thing that really frustrates me about Rishi Sunak, right, is that the Conservative Party has a rule where if you basically have immunity for a year in terms of being challenged. And he had a position of strength, not only because he came in after all of the chaos, but he could have really led into that again. He could have really called the bluff of the likes of people on the right, like Suella Braverman, like the Leanders. He could have called their bluff and they couldn't have done anything to him, because nobody but the most suicidal would have tried to do anything at that stage. And he didn't even use that position of strength. He just rolled over. I do get it. He's a bad politician. Everybody says that now. I've been saying for a year, the whole pundits I'm hearing are saying it. But he's just a really bad politician. Sorry. I'm not sorry. Like you, in a sense, like you said, he's worth a billion. He's worth almost £1 billion. I'm not sorry.
Just lacks charisma. I mean,
it's more than charisma. Come on.
Okay. Character, leadership, instincts, good advisors. The list is extremely long. But I think to come back on what Corey said, he did have a vision. He did have a 5-point plan. But I think the issue is that the landscape enabled him to have moving goalposts. And so he could just maneuver his list so that it looked like he was actually achieving something when he was struggling to achieve the thing that he'd set out to in the first place. I think it's a masterclass in what does it look like to bring people along with you and to fail at that. And ultimately, if you are going to be the leader of the United Kingdom, you have to have that skill. And so if you don't have it, you have an obligation to throw all of your resources at it so that you are endowed with it, so that you can lead well. And that is the thing that I don't understand why Rishi Sunak has not done. Because he could have had a fundamentally different premiership.
I'm confused. I really am confused here. I don't believe that whoever the Conservatives put up post-Truss, pre-Truss, and really arguably even pre-Johnson was going to win this election. I think the country's in such an economic... We have a Tory party which is making the Republican Party look functional right now. We have Lee Anderson leaving to Reform, potentially not only inflates the Reform Party, but it can spell economic oblivion for the oldest political party in the Western world, the Conservative Party. And this is all set before Sunak. The fissures in the Conservative Party, of which Brexit blew open, have been around really since Thatcher. But the two competing wings, the One Nation Tories and the hardline Thatcherite right, have been able to muddle along. That's blew asunder in 2016. This isn't Sunak's fault that he has this fractious parliament. It isn't Sunak's fault that we have the worst performing economy in Western Europe. These are structural problems. And he has to not only fight the right side of the Conservative Party, he has to fight a heavily right-slanted press who would rather talk about the Princess of Wales than the fact that 50% of adult Britons are now in poverty. Corey Bernard, tell me any of what I said is incorrect.
So no, I disagree. And I don't think the outlook is... I think the immediate outlook is dire. 100% dire. But I don't think that the medium-term or long-term outlook is dire at all. At the end of the day, no matter how...
He's not going to be around for the medium-term prime minister.
No, I don't mean for Rishi Sunak. I mean for the party. He's done. Yeah, he's finished. He's going to... This time next year, he'll be in Stanford on some board, or San Francisco, Silicon Valley. Yeah, he'll be fine. I don't mean Sunak party. The end of the world, like I said, the position the Conservative Party are in now, especially relative to the Labour Party, in my opinion, is no worse than it was in 1997. All right? I keep banging on, keep saying the same thing, and I'll keep saying it again and again. Keir Starmer is no Sir Anthony Linton Blair. Okay? So that, first of all. And that's why I say relative to the Labour Party. Now, if Starmer was a sort of Blair-type figure, then yeah, I could see maybe some serious medium-term damage. But there's no way. It's just not going to happen. I think the Tory party are, this again, this isn't the early 1920s either. This isn't where Labour were there ready to take over from the Lib Dems. There is no third party, no matter how bad things get for the Tory party. There is no third party there waiting like Labour was in the 1930s, ready to become that second party. So there's no competition. So they'll be fine. Long term, they'll be fine. Medium term, that depends on how well or badly Keir Starmer does when he becomes Prime Minister. Short term, yeah, they're screwed. 100%. Hear that. Agree with it. And I've only recently agreed with that because I've recently realised that they don't really care about winning. And so that's why they're not really giving... Then definitely, they're clearly not putting much effort into trying to win. So yeah, short term, screwed. Medium term, depends. Long term, they'll be fine.
I just want to quickly say, we've had plenty of unsavory characters move to the Bay Area searching their fortune. We don't need your loser politicians.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just coming to the Bay Area as well. Thank you very much.
It'll just be coming.
Shade.
What about ones who have already been there? Because obviously he was already there, wasn't he? So he'll just be coming back. He'll be a return. He'll be a returning resident as opposed to a brand new figure. Are they allowed?
Isn't he an alumni of Harvard?
No, Stanford.
He's Stanford, is he?
Yeah. That's where he met his wife.
There's a big difference between now, 2024 and 1997. And it's the state of the economy. That is the big difference. Yes, you had 18 years is 1979 Thatcher, 18 years of Tory rule, and people just wanted a change. But there wasn't impending economic disaster. You didn't have every day another set of statistics which told you Britain is the sick man of Europe. Our regions, the West Midlands, the Northwest, were still magnitudes richer than their equivalent regions in Poland, the Czech Republic, Slovakia. Now we're on a level with them. So there is a big difference in terms of we, and also, and this is where I do slightly agree with you, that Blair brought an air of optimism. People thought, yeah, almost a bit like Obama, yes, we can, things are going to be different. Things can only get better, as D. Ream said. We were there 1996, big dance floor hit. That is not the case now. And we all know that Starmer is going to win this election by default. I don't share your optimism even about Britain's medium-term future unless we have, to a point which I chastised Lear about earlier, about saying that Sunak's got no charisma. We do need a charismatic leader in Britain, not somebody who just smiles and is telegenic in the way that Blair was initially. And he felt young and he felt so different from the grey suits that had gone before the Tory party, but somebody with a charismatic message that's actually going to say something really quite positive about the country, but also to say, you know what, we're in the crap, right? We have cities like Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool, where 50% of adults are in technical poverty and our living standards are falling behind all of our major competitors. And we need to address that. And the way to address it is by some level of public ownership so that we can collectively reignite the British economy. I don't know, right? Maybe I'm just some Corbynista and I never was back then. Leah, please bring us home on this, right? Because I can rant on quite eloquently about the state of the country of my birth. But please, maybe I'm being a little bit too negative. The floor is yours. You said Rishi Sunak is going to be the Prime Minister come the next general election. But what about the Conservative Party? Electoral oblivion? Tell us.
I hope so. If so, they've done it to themselves. They are having an identity crisis that they are clearly not capable of resolving. And I think they need to go and sit on the naughty staff and figure out what they stand for. I feel like Rishi's got 9 lives. I don't know where he's up to on that, but I'm pretty sure that his ability to cling on for dear life will see him through this process. Cameron's sitting in the wings, waiting for an opportunity to bite. And somehow that's not anywhere in the papers at the moment. But I don't think it's going to be any of the candidates that we see around the table at the moment that is going to be able to be that agent of change that the Tory party needs to be able to rise like a phoenix from the ashes, whether that be medium or long term. And I think we're all okay with that. But I do think that we need to think about, to your point about the economy and having a vision that is positive and that people can get behind. And ultimately, before we start thinking about how dire the state of affairs is, why don't we think about the ways in which the government is currently spending the money and the accountability and the transparency that goes with that and taking responsibility for decisions. There are things that could be done and that I hope that Labour will do. But ultimately, we need changes coming. And the only question in my mind is whether that change goes far enough to see us into the future that we want to see.
Corey.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up on something that Leah mentioned then about David Cameron. And you know, I was speaking before about the 1920s and 1930s. And maybe it wouldn't be so bad if we go back to the 20s and the 19th century. And let's just have a prime minister from the lot.
You want to go back to slavery?
The late 19th century.
You want to reinstitute the British Empire and enslave a third of the globe?
The late 19th century. Yes, we can...
Children don't go to school in raggedy clothes and whatever. You want people to have rickets. What are you telling me?
All right, the 20s. The point I'm trying to make is
that the you know what, women that can't vote unless they're 25.
No, we don't have to go back wholesale. What I mean by going back is by having a prime minister from the House of Lords. Let's get Kwame Dave back in.
Lordy, mate. Well, no, you don't have to go back so far. Alec Douglas Hume.
Douglas Hume, of course, yes.
1960s, sir. The 1960s. The last time we had a prime minister that wasn't in the Commons, but come on now.
Let's go back to the swinging 60s, then. Sorry.
Corey.
I'm tyrannizing in the Commons.
You need to check your meds, sir. You need to check your meds.
Great Britain and quit again? Is that what this is?
Sorry, say that again. They're like...
Great Britain, great again.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes. MGG. McGugger.
Listen, on that note, and thank you that you made me laugh and somewhat smile there, because I was really winding myself up into a real kind of state of anger and depression about the country of my birth. So on that note, I'm going to say we have to say goodbye. But before we completely switch off the podcast and you, listener, you go do something else, it's only right and fitting that I say to the panel what you've been up to in the last 7 days. Aaron Fisher. First, that question goes to you, sir.
Oh, I get to go first. Incredible. Logan and I fought so hard over who would go last before, and now I get to be first. That's great. Take that, Logan. I can only think of one thing right now, Royfield Brown, and that is that your country of Jamaica, or the country of your parents, is about to face off in a football match with the United States of America in about 7 minutes. And I'm looking forward to watching that game. And we'll see how it goes. Because you can't lose, because we're supposed to win. And if we lose, then you win. And if we draw, then you win. And if we lose, then hopefully we'll get rid of the coach with too many G's in his name. And we can move on to something better. So that's what I have on my mind.
And you know what? And we're going into that game with a pretty decent squad, but without Leon Bailey, who has been tearing up the Premiership for Villa this year. We had some contretemps with the coach and isn't actually in the team, so arguably one of the players of the season in the English Premier League isn't representing Jamaica. But yes, we go into that game as underdogs, but not massively. When it comes to football, America aren't great shakes, we know that.
Fair enough.
Corey Bernard, what about you, sir? Last 7 days. Oh, are you going to talk about your fantastic trip to civilization, i.e. you came to Birmingham?
Yes, of course. There could be no other highlight for me for this past week than to spend some time in the third city of this country with yourself, meeting yourself, and introducing myself also to a new stout. What was it? Nightly Jar. I'm definitely going to find that in the shop and buy a couple of cans if I can find it. But yeah, of course, there could be nothing better in my past week. There's nothing I could point to apart from meeting your good self in the third city of this country. No matter how disappointed I was that your Pret closed that 5, which is outrageous.
Listen, you need to get over yourself. You're in the business district. All the businessmen
had gone home to count their money, their ill-gotten gains. That's the reason why the Pret had closed. How can people catch up with you on social media?
Yep, Instagram, Twitter, 168PlumbyMath.
Awesome. Logan Phillips, you gave us a whole load of political wonkery and statistical wonkery before. I, for once, was riveted. You were awesome. What else have you been up to in the last 7 days other than running the runes over your abacus with the political goings-on in the United States?
Like Aram, I'm watching sports right now, March Madness. My bracket, as we were talking, was about to ascend to the highest heights, and it came crashing down, as it always happens, because college kids make tons of mistakes. And for those who are not American, you probably have literally no idea what I'm talking about. That would take a whole other podcast to explain, so I'll spare you guys that. But on Race to the White House last week, I've been working hard to build this new tool that will let you see if the polling switches a certain amount in either Biden or Trump's direction in all the states, how would it change the nature of the race? And the whole goal is to help get people a read on what's going to happen in this presidential election. And when you gain in one state, you tend to gain in others. That'll be up on the site probably early next week, maybe as early as Monday. Yeah.
And the name of the site, and where can people catch up with you on the socials?
You're a better promoter than I am for my own thing, Royfield. I appreciate that. It is Race to the White House, racetothewh.com. And we track the polling for every election, and we forecast every election too. And if you're new to it, it's a good place to start because we make it as easy to follow as possible.
You see what I've done here, Leah? I've left the best till last.
I'll take it. I'm just over here trying to get to Easter in one piece. I think the highlight for me is tied between the privilege of doing UN community mediation in Johannesburg in the autumn, which I had a call about this morning, but also I had the opportunity to spend a whole day at London Business School with Female Founders Rise this week. And it was just so wonderful to see so many driven, ambitious, smart, eloquent women keen to grow in their businesses and invest in their people and learn everything that there is that was available for us to learn. And I was really grateful for the opportunity to do that. Where can I be found? I can be found on X or on Instagram. Only One Leah on X and Seen Heard Spoken on Instagram. And also worth a follow of the Longest Day podcast. This week we have the fantastic Professor Lucy Easthope, who has advised on disasters ranging from 9/11 to COVID to Grenfell to the things that you can possibly imagine. And it's a fantastic privilege to know her. And it's a great episode.
There you go. There's been the team. We've dealt with the complexity of the Republican Senate primary race in Ohio. And then we've looked at a situation which I think is much less complex, which is the dire state of Rishi Sunak and the leadership of the Conservative Party in the good old United Kingdom. I've been Royfield Brown. Look after yourselves. Look after your loved ones. Remember, left of centre politics is right thinking politics. Toodaloo.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.